Welcome to the podcast that's dedicated to making you a faster cyclist, the Ask a Cycling Coach podcast presented by Trainer Road. I'm Coach Jonathan Lee, and I'm here with Coach Chad Timmerman.
Hello.
And with our CEO, Nate Pearson.
Hello.
And today we're going to take more of your coaching questions and cycling and triathlon related questions. You can submit them to us at support@trainerroad.com. And when you reach out there, we'll give you a form that you can enter in your questions for us. You can find this podcast on iTunes, on SoundCloud, on Stitcher, or wherever else you aggregate all of your podcasts and listen to them. And leave us a review on whatever platform you use. We appreciate that. We like 5-star reviews. Those are the best. So if it's so justified, please leave it for us. We appreciate it. So we'll get things started right now by ironically somebody named Nate who has a question for Nate. Nate, a few episodes ago, you mentioned the fact that you had been undergoing some sleep testing to try to optimize your sleep, and you're having some issues with it. And Nathan, the guy that submitted the question here, he has the same issue. So he's curious to know if you learned anything from the sleep study that you underwent.
Yeah, so I'll just give a little recap. I've always had problems like being tired and sleeping 10, 11, 12 hours and still feeling tired. I wake up with a headache and dry mouth and all that kind of stuff. And my wife recently noticed that I was like, she'd hear me gasping in the middle of the night. Or she'd hear me like going and breathing and then kind of getting less and less and then stop breathing and then taking a huge breath at once. My dad has sleep apnea, but I thought I never had sleep apnea because I'm a skinny guy. I'm 6'6". Right now I'm 200 pounds, but I race at like 180. And at my height, that's pretty light. So I thought before it was actually like a testosterone problem, but I got that tested and that was just fine. So I went to a sleep doctor and he did a few things on me. First, I did an at-home study. So what it means when you suspect that you have sleep apnea, you go to a doctor and he looked at all these things about my body. He's like, well, you have a narrow jaw. That could cause it. He looked at my nose. He's like, it looks like you have some problems breathing through your nose. That could cause it. Your throat's shaped this way. That could cause it. So we're going to do a sleep study. And there's two ways. You could either do it in the office or at home. My insurance rejected the in the office one. So I got this thing and I slept overnight with a whole bunch of things connected to me, including a pulse ox on my finger to measure the oxygen in my blood. And then also it measured my breathing as I slept. So while I was, so I did that and I gave them the data back and the doctor read it. And I ended up having about 14 instances per hour. That was my score. And that's actually a low sleep apnea score. If I were to have one more instance per hour, I would be considered moderate sleep apnea. Then if you're over, I think it's 30 or 35, then you have severe sleep apnea. That means like you're not getting more than 2 minutes of uninterrupted sleep. And that's where my dad was at. So although it doesn't sound like much, that means that over the night I woke up 105 times, which it's hard to get rest. And especially if you're training hard. I know there's no validity to this, but I think that when I train really hard, that my body gets kind of depressed and I don't sleep as well. And I have more sleep apnea. And when I did the test, I hadn't trained in a few days
and just
I was
fine. Just to clarify something, Nate, when you say you woke up that many times in the middle of the night, you didn't consciously recognize the fact that you woke up that many times, right?
Exactly. Yeah. I think I recognized like 5 or 6 times, but not the 105 times. It's just these little brain awakenings. The also curious part is that, so at-home studies probably aren't as accurate, so I could be higher or lower, but with the pulse ox, I dropped more than 10 points, 3 times during the night, meaning I was like, I think I got down to, normally when I'm awake, I'm like 98, 97. At night, I went down to like 84 a few times. Wow. And people who have really bad sleep apnea, I was reading about it, can get into like the 60s and 70s. And that can cause like problems with your heart and I think stroke. He shared this huge list. Of course, that's when, there's a whole bunch of things associated with it. What's interesting is the doctor's like, well, you're at 14, but if you're at 15, you'd be at risk for all these things. I'm like, well, just one more. I got a CPAP machine to go home. A CPAP is a constant pressure machine where you put it on your face and it will breathe. It'll push air into you. And this one was to test the pressure. I did that for a night. I used a full face mask and that was annoying. The reason why I used a full face mask is because this doctor was smart and he actually got a CT scan for me. And we got that back and I've always had really bad allergies. And I've never been able to breathe through my nose while I work out. I remember I'd go on runs and there'd always be like this old guy going, you need to breathe through your nose. You need to breathe through your nose. Because as soon as we start, I would start mouth breathing. Like, that would be some way to make me faster. And I always thought, oh, maybe I was like a, this is when I was beginning, I'm not as fit because I can't breathe through my nose. Well, my CT scan shows that the two sinus cavities right by my nose are about 90% obstructed. Like, it's hard to get anything through there. And then I also have in my left sinus this gigantic polyp. I think it's about the size of a silver dollar or something. So I'm going to have surgery to get that removed. One of the guys said it's either going to rotor my nose. And then hopefully after that might be the thing causing my sleep apnea. And then we're going to do a test after that happens. And hopefully I don't have to have any CPAP machine. And that will fix it for me. So it's a long story, but it's kind of interesting because I think we're all like, optimizing sleep is kind of the thing that people don't do. And if, imagine if I go, you know, I wake up 14 times an hour. What if I woke up 2 times an hour? How much better could my entire life be? Even if I wasn't training. I mean, I hope this, the surgery, it's supposed to be super painful, but I'll, once I, it's my first consultation with the ENT is in for 3 months. So once that's done, I'll let everyone know what she says.
Sweet. Thanks, Nate. And hopefully the other Nate gets the information he needed there. Garrett has a question. He says, hey there, I've listened to all the podcasts and learned loads and really enjoy using Trainer Road. I've not yet started a plan, but will do soon. And so far, I've just been trying lots of workouts and having fun. I've noticed I respond well to sweet spot training. I feel the difference after a few weeks. But when I try VO2 workouts, I don't seem to get anything back. Is it best to stick with what I know works? Or is it just a matter of giving them a longer chance to work? Let's address that one first, Chad.
Yeah, Gareth, it's probably exactly that. You probably haven't done it long enough to actually recognize the benefit of it. Also, if you're new to training, you might just be responding better to more muscle endurance work. Maybe the sweet spot stuff is more in your wheelhouse and you're going to respond a little more readily to that. But at some point, that's going to top out. And whether you've done VO2 max work prior to that or you start to integrate it, you know, when you absolutely need to, at some point, there will come a more obviously useful nature with that sort of training. So, and if you're not already following a structured training plan, the amount of VO2 max work you're doing might not be, like I said earlier, consistent enough to actually spur the sort of adaptations or the response you're looking for.
Is that kind of consistent, Chad, with, I mean, if you're the type of person that you need to train to do really anaerobic efforts, like really intense sprints, but you've been doing a different type of training, is this principle exist for all different types of intensities that you train at, or is it just in this case unique to VO2 and sweet spot?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure I understand your question.
So what I'm getting at there is, for example, Garrett has an issue where he says that VO2 workouts are tough for him, but he's sweet spot's just fine for him. And really what I'm hinting at, and I should probably just say it, this isn't just unique to VO2 and sweet spot. If you're training in one way and you need to perform a different way or you strive to perform a different way, these things take time, right? I mean, it's not like an overnight thing. This is going to take time. And if you don't see results immediately after the first few workouts, that's not out of the norm. That's to be expected.
Yeah. And he may already have good power at VO2 max. Maybe, you know, relative to all his other capabilities, that's already pretty well established for whatever reason, or he's just getting a better response from the sweet spot work. So it's not to say that one's better than the other, but for whatever reason right now, he's responding better to that. Like I said earlier, there'll come a point where that'll start to taper and you'll have to mix it up a bit. And whether you get your, you know, aerobic adaptation through long, slow stuff, or, you know, as we vastly favor the harder VO2 work, at some point that's going to have to figure into the mix.
That's what I was going to say is, so I'll create a hypothetical person, and this might not be Garth, but let's say someone comes in and they've done tons of VO2 max work, right? They just kind of hammer it. Maybe they're a CrossFitter and they did CrossFit endurance, and all they did was VO2 max. And as we know, if you do just VO2 max, you'll get a sharp increase in fitness, but then it will plateau. You hit the ceiling really quick before your aerobic system gets any better. So maybe somebody come in like that, and then does longer sweet spot intervals of 10, 20 minutes, that's going to seem really hard. VO2 max stuff's still going to be easy because it's recently trained up. But the sweet spot too is going to get them like kind of build their cake more, and then they can ice it again. And then, you know, as the next season comes, they're going to build their cake even higher to another level. And then they're going to ice it with VO2 max that's going to increase it. Yeah. Is that accurate?
A really good way to put it. I mean, there has to be that variety. After a while, your body just doesn't respond the way it used to, and you have to change things up. And between, you know, pushing your aerobic capacity up high and then revisiting your muscle endurance, between those two things, you could bounce back and forth between those two things alone and become a better endurance athlete in a general sense.
Garrus, next question. He says, also, I would like to know your opinion on DNA testing. Is it useful information or a waste of money? I hear they can tell you what you respond to for your training and diet and your potential for VO2. I know I don't have any experience with any of the DNA testing for this stuff.
Yeah, I've heard the same thing, but I don't either. I couldn't help you out on this matter.
Yeah, and I don't. I've heard too. They're like, oh, you should be eating more carbs or more protein based on something, but I don't have any science or even opinion to talk about it.
Yeah, and then I think that he's kind of leading in with this one because he says, am I correct in thinking that even though you may not push your VO2 up, you can increase your power at VO2, or is it all just fixed? And yeah. So that's where it changes.
Yeah, so DNA testing aside, the trainability of VO2 max is a germane issue. So you can actually elevate your VO2 max, but that's usually when you're coming from a detrained state and you don't have a lot of fitness to start with. So to a point, you can push your VO2 max up. And then, of course, there's a genetic limitation on top of that. Past that, it becomes more about elevating your power at VO2 max and then elevating your threshold and how the two correlate. So if you're already reasonably fit, you're not going to see a whole lot of bump in VO2 max itself, you know, save for, you know, you could lose some weight and change your VO2 max relative to your body weight. It's more about improving FTP, also improving power and then or your VO2 max power, and then trying to drag those things or push your FTP closer to that power of VO2 max.
Chad, we've both gone through VO2 max tests, but is there a reason for an athlete to get a VO2 max test?
Not really. I mean, it's interesting in that you can see how big your engine is, and maybe that's inspiring in some sense. But I've seen people, or I've read about people with massive VO2 maxes who will never realize that potential because they don't want to work hard or they don't structure their training correctly. I've seen people with, you know, pretty unimpressive VO2 maxes, but are just workers and they train appropriately and they push themselves as close to their potential as they can, and they're actually really stellar endurance athletes. So it could be useful information in terms of devising particular workouts, but it's not necessarily going to tell you whether or not you're going to be a successful endurance athlete.
Yeah, no, I've seen. So I'm a motocross fan. I like that sport a lot. And one of the athletes in that sport, he loves cycling and everything else. So he got a VO2 max test. He's a young guy. His name's Adam Cincirillo. I remember him posting something up about it, and he had a really bad VO2 max, like really low. And he's like, well, I guess I'm just not really much of an athlete. And that's like,
yeah,
that's... like what good did it do him? You know what I mean? And the fact is he's an incredible rider, right? A motocross rider. And I'm sure he's, because he puts in a lot of time on a bicycle too. I'm sure he's good there too. It's, you know, sometimes you can go into these tests and they have the potential to do more harm sometimes, mentally than good.
That's what I worry about. It's like, it's just work. Like it's kind of, I don't know. It's kind of like knowing the day you're going to die.
Yeah.
Well, it's like with climbers too. Some guys assume, you know, I'm big, I weigh more than 180 pounds, I'm never going to be able to climb.
Never
well.
Do it.
Well, not anymore, because you just talked yourself out of it. But the fact of the matter is, I weigh 180 pounds and 6'2", and I've outclimbed guys almost literally half my size.
You're a good climber.
Yeah, it's just don't try to assume that these things are going to dictate what sort of athlete you can be.
Yeah. Yeah, cycling's half mental. Yeah,
very much.
Don't shoot yourself in the head.
And you can always raise that power at VO2 max. You can raise your threshold. That's what I like to focus on, because that's what I can change. You know,
power at VO2 max is extremely trainable. That's probably maybe even one of the most. I bet you get the biggest increase. I don't know, Chad. Out of all the, maybe sprint too, you probably go up the most. But
yeah, my concern is always just kind of figuring out where your power at VO2 max falls. You know, figuring out how hard you can work for 2 to 3 minutes, and then seeing what percentage of your FTP that is, and then trying to push actually elevate both of them. But basically, I do VO2 max work to lift my FTP, to drag my my FTP closer to that power at VO2 max.
And I think we have a blog post coming up, right, Chad? I think I saw you.
We do.
Wrote
we just started
outline
formulating the information, which is why all of this is particularly fresh on my mind.
Yeah, so it's going to go even more in depth in the topic of VO2 max.
Yep.
So exactly. blog.trainerroad.com if you want to check that out.
It's coming soon, hopefully next week. So Ian has a question. He says, but first off, he says, I first want to start by saying I left you guys a glowing review on iTunes because you have answered yes. many of my questions in the past professionally and thoroughly. Sweet. You've really helped me become a better cyclist. Thank you. That's great, Ian. Awesome stuff. In fact, Ian, we saw a video that you just posted up, I believe, on YouTube doing an FTP test.
That was Ian. Yep. The whole company saw that.
Yeah. Kudos, man.
That's awesome improvement, and we dug your solution for the sweat guards on your headphones.
Yeah, that was impressive stuff. And really, like, that was very impressive work. Thanks for putting that up. So your first question. I'm currently starting on week 3 of the Sweet Spot-based high volume plan, and for time and personal sanity reasons, I'm having trouble making it through Sunday's McClure. That's the name of the workout. It's a 3-hour workout with a TSS of 128. So that's a lower intensity workout, I believe, Chad. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's a long endurance ride. 75%.
Perfect. Okay, cool. I want to make up for this. I can still do a workout, and I can still do a workout on Sundays. And I was also thinking about taking my Monday rest day and putting in a workout then. Would this, and then he has in quotes, make up for not getting through a 3-hour workout on Sundays by making my weekly TSS score comparable to if I completed the McClure ride?
Yeah, pretty much, Ian. When it comes to those longer rides, they're really just TSS builders. We're just trying to basically dose out some extra stress to keep you on a TSS upswing, to keep on pushing your current limits and make you a little stronger. If you break that up into a couple days, the nature of the workout changes a little bit, but what we're after primarily still takes place. And because you're doing sweet spot base, I know you're getting your high intensity interval workouts already in earlier in the week, which is what I'm most concerned with. So really, this is just a way for you to keep padding that TSS, spend a little useful time on the bike, maybe accrue a bit of aerobic adaptation. But these are all things that are already being addressed with those interval workouts. So this is just kind of icing on the cake.
What if he was a more like, Ironman racer or something?
Yeah,
like
in that case, it's really useful in different ways. So now you're spending more time on the bike. You're getting used to the sort of stress that comes with those long hours on the bike, learning how to manage your nutrition while you're riding, things that have to happen with long rides. I mean, I would never encourage a full distance triathlete to have not done a 100-mile ride going into their first Ironman.
Yeah, so if maybe then, but if he's, you know, doing hour and a half road races, splitting up the TSS, totally A-okay.
I don't see any problem with it at all.
Yeah, perfect. I like that. Good clarification there, Nate. The next question, he says, I completed an FTP test on day 1, which came out to be 298. So for starting week 3 and the workouts, except for that McClure workout that he just said, so far they're very easy for him, or he says fairly easy. I've increased the intensity 5 to 10% on many of the workouts. So for example, instead of doing 6x6 minute intervals at 88 to 94% FTP, sounds a lot like the workout I did yesterday there. So sweet spot stuff. I'm doing the intervals at 100 to 105% FTP, which are comfortably challenging. Does it defeat the purpose? So this is his question. Does it defeat the purpose of the base period to increase the intensity to the point where the intervals are a lot harder? Because in this case, if his FTP truly is 98 and he's pumping it up by 105, he's over his threshold for those intervals, right? So his question is, does it defeat the purpose of the base period to increase the intensity to the point where the intervals are a lot harder? Or should one, for all plans and workouts, increase the intensity to the point where they just feel challenged?
I'm not entirely sure that's the issue here. I'm not sure who we're talking to. Oh, it's still Ian. Chances are you've underestimated your FTP. By its nature, if you're spending comfortably challenging periods of time at threshold, supposed threshold, and above it, and repeating it, it's not threshold. So I'm guessing you've underestimated your FTP a bit, and that you're actually a little higher than 298. So you can elevate it, but you actually at some point you're gonna want to affect your FTP and change it in your profile so that everything scales along with it.
That's another thing, is that maybe someone who's I've seen this, and actually when I take a break from training to help build Trainer Road, I've taken a couple years off. At different times, if you're new to training and you like like right now I'm coming back from, this is embarrassing, I'm coming back from about a 300 FTP and to right now about a 200 FTP, but I'm 3 weeks into sweet spot base and I know my FTP is a lot higher than 200 now just because I've done 3 weeks of working out. So although I don't have a test for 6 weeks, Chad, is it smart to then bump my, either increase my intensity or raise my FTP?
Yeah, if you know what the workouts felt like or at least what they should feel like or that you're just under challenged in a general sense, just nudge it up a little bit and you can do it within the workout, just adjust the workout intensity. And you do that a couple workouts in a row, then maybe adjust your actual FTP and bring everything up. But you don't have to save it for a test. You don't have to wait every 4 or 6 weeks. If you know you've seen improvement and you want the workouts to be continuously challenging, then go ahead and add 2 or 3 percentage points here and there and see how the workouts go.
Yeah. The another interesting thing is that when I do come back, my FTP floor is always 190. It's weird. Like that's as weak as I get. But then hopefully we'll get up to mid 300s this time.
So one quick thing I want to clarify: if you do go the route of just adjusting your intensity, and let's say that you know this guy tested at 298, but let's say his FTP is actually 305, just for kicks. If that's the case, and he's upping the intensity, the TSS might not reflect as accurately as it would if his FTP was set at 305, right, Chad?
Yeah, exactly, and that's part of the problem. So if you're really strictly watching your TSS, then that's going to have an effect on it, one that could create minor issues, no big deal.
One more question, Chad, sorry. Sure. I'm going to go back to Ian's previous question, and let's say that three-hour ride, he wanted to do that outside. That's completely okay too, right? So Ian said it, the three-hour ride, I didn't want to do it. What if you just wanted to go tool around, have some fun?
Absolutely, and that's pretty much the only way I can make myself do it. I top out at about 2 hours. So anything beyond that, I've got to go outdoors. But one thing to keep in mind, if you're going to do what was supposed to be a three-hour ride inside, it's probably going to be longer outside. It could be substantially longer. So in that case, if you're shooting for a particular TSS and you're trying to keep that TSS ramping on a weekly basis, make sure that you actually accumulate the target TSS regardless of how long it takes.
And if you're going to do that three-hour ride outside, don't do a group ride. That's going to be a hammer fest if it's supposed to be lower intensity.
Yeah,
it's
ideally,
tempting.
You're going into that final ride of the week. You're probably pretty cooked. So 3 hours of 60, 70% of threshold is already going to be challenging enough.
Rick, he says, thanks for the podcast. I have a mag trainer. Can this be used for your training or for your app? What would be needed? Good question, Rick. Nate, do you want to take this one?
Yes. Yes, you can. So if you just have a trainer, we have something called virtual power, which allows to turn your trainer into to act like a power meter. I'm not going to go as in depth. There's a link on our homepage to virtual power. If you click on features, there'll be a link to virtual power. But all you really need is a speed sensor and your trainer. And then depending on what platform you're on. So if you're on iOS, you can connect with the Bluetooth sensor. If you're on a PC, you connect it with an Ant stick. And if you're Mac, you can connect either Bluetooth or Ant. All the information's on trainerroad.com, but you can totally train just like you have a power meter. The only caveat is you won't be able to compare those numbers to somebody else, but you can still constantly increase the, like as Chad was saying, increase the stress, your TSS, keep getting stronger with virtual power.
Yeah, you'll reap the benefits of training with power, even though it's not like a power meter. Like Nate said, you can't compare it to other people, but just the same, you'll reap all the benefits. And I actually started out on a mag trainer. And one quick tip, Rick, that I would say is hopefully your mag trainer isn't like mine. I got mine and I don't know if a pit bull just like trained himself teething on mine or what happened because I got it used. But the spot where the dial was supposed to tell me which setting I had, it was completely chewed up and like torn apart. So I had no clue what setting I was on. And I took my first FTP, this is before I worked with Trainer Road. I took my first FTP test and Chad and I were at a training camp because we were on the same team. And I told Chad that like my FTP was 447 and I got laughed at by everybody because what I had was a setting on my trainer that wasn't lined up with the virtual power setting in the app. So if you can figure out or make sure that you see which setting on your mag trainer you have the resistance set at. And then when you're pairing and setting up virtual power, it'll ask you which resistance level you have. It's pretty straightforward.
For those who aren't familiar, mag trainers have different levels. So what they do is there's a magnet that's next to the flywheel, and how close that magnet is there's an indexing system generates how much power there is. So it generates a really flat power curve as the power goes up. So with Trainer Road, with virtual power, you kind of have to pick one that's really good. Probably you know, you're in your mid gear at threshold. So let's say that's level four on your trainer. You have to then in trainer road, you say, I'm on this mag level four, and you just keep training with that single level. If you ever spin out of gears and you get too strong, then you do a new FTP test at level five and you start with level five. But that's it's mag trainers. I think they're only trainers that do that, that have those kind of levels. In general, I personally am not a fan of mag trainers. They're inexpensive. The two trainers that I love that are like mechanical would be the Kirk Kinetic Road Machine and the Cyclops Jet Fluid Pro. Mm-hmm. And then for electronic trainers, I think everyone in the, we're going to call them smart trainers from now on, everyone in the office loves the Wahoo Kicker, the one with the wheel off design.
Yep. Echo. Steve, hi, Jonathan, Nate, and Chad. Firstly, thank you so much for your amazing software and podcasts. You're welcome. I've only been using Trainer Road for 2 months now, and I'm already so excited for next season. The structure has helped me massively, and this goes for the rest as much as the training. And I am enjoying my turbo trainer for the first time. That's cool. I think all of us felt that way, right? I'm doing two of the spring classics in Belgium next April, Tour of Flanders and Liège-Bastogne-Liège. Each of these are over 250 kilometers, and Liège-Bastogne-Liège has over 15,000 feet of climbing. Not the easiest of events to train for, as they require punchy power as well as serious endurance. I did both events last year, but the shorter distances, around 160 kilometers, and was pretty tired at the end, so an extra 100 kilometers on each seems daunting. But I can't go back without taking on the tough ones, so kudos to you for doing that. So now we're going to get into the description and the question here. I'm 6'4", 200 pounds, with a current base phase FTP of 298. My strength is punchy, climbing, and I see my weaknesses as overall endurance. Understanding more from your podcast, now realize my aerobic engine hasn't been strong enough, and I need to cultivate some fat-burning fitness, not just sugar. My plan has been to do traditional base mid-volume, repeating the longest weeks in 2 and 3. I haven't had the time to do the full high-volume plan. I know you recommend sweet spot base for a lot of people, but I feel I need a broad base for these events, and I already feel like my muscular endurance is improving a lot doing traditional base. I will then do the high volume sustained power build, followed by the high volume rolling road race plan. So these are all of these are our training plans. During these, I will substitute a weekend day for increasingly longer outdoor rides to try and prepare my body for the distances I need to cover. Does this sound like a reasonable plan to you, and would you recommend anything else? Chad, what do you think?
Yes, next question. I'm just kidding. Steve, it actually sounds like a really good plan. the traditional base plans, it seems like we've been slamming a lot lately, but they do have their place, and this is one of them. You're doing long events. You've got a lot of time to spend on the bike. You've recognized that you burn a lot of sugar and you don't burn a lot of fat. You're willing to do the work and endure the monotony, so I actually think it's a good trajectory for you, and then you're planning to move on to a couple plans that slot in really nicely. So if it's working for you, you're already positively responding, then I think you should just stay the course. Sounds good.
This was a longer question, but I wanted to include it for that reason. Thanks, Chad, for giving that response, because I know we've gotten a lot of questions recently on Facebook, on Twitter, and everything else, people asking us, why do you even have traditional base? Why should I do traditional base? And I think that this is a good application for it, right, Chad?
Mm-hmm. I agree.
Yeah. So yep. There are scenarios where it's good. We see that the majority of scenarios tend to line up in sweet spot base.
True.
Something that I noticed when I first started cycling is I only did intervals I don't think I ever even did a long ride. I got my FTP up high, and then in triathlons, when I did some longer stuff, it was really hard. And I actually did some more of the traditional base stuff to kind of rebuild my fitness. And I kind of sound like the last guy's was Steve, Steve's question. And I did that. I didn't have to do it forever, but I did notice an improvement.
Certainly. Yep. Thomas, this is my first season of structured training using Trainer Road and a kicker. I took my first FTP test and went with the number it spit out. But how do I know if I've nailed my FTP? I've just finished my first week of sweet spot base training, and I kind of feel it's too easy. I want to make sure I spend the next few weeks productively. Should I try and test again?
Yeah, again, Thomas, this goes back to one thing we didn't mention earlier, that it, with FTP testing and, you know, trying to determine whether or not, as you put it, you've nailed it, there's a very much a trial and error process. First couple times you do it, pacing's a big concern. You don't necessarily know how to hurt that much for that long. You get better at it the more you do it. not many people test to their, or even close to their capabilities that first time through. So if you don't mind doing it again, if you, you know, if it fits into your training schedule, then absolutely go do it again. The other alternative is, you know, what we suggested earlier, and just a 2 or 3% bump, see how the next workout goes, 2 or 3% bump. And that's, there's quite a bit of trial and error in that. And you may, it's problematic for sure. But if you don't have time to reassess, it's a quick fix solution. But if you're up for assessing again, yeah, go for it.
I think some red flags would be if I looked at my FTP test and I noticed my intervals, I started out really hard and then faded the rest of the time. Mm-hmm. Or if I'm doing the 2x8 minute test, one of them was really low, then I would actually just drop that one and look at the one that was high. Or in the 20-minute test, also, if it was the other way, I started really low and then went, you know, steadily increased a significant amount over that test. All of those would be red flags where I would either manually bump my FTP. I'd probably just manually pump up my FTP rather than retesting because it's hard. But if any of those things happen in your test, I would raise your FTP. What do you think, Chad?
Nate brings up a good point, especially with the 2x8 minute test. We really, with that test or with that format, only need one good 8 minute effort. So if for whatever reason you start the first one, you recognize you've gone out too hard, you don't necessarily have to gut it out knowing that it's going to come at the expense of your next one and pretty much your whole workout and subsequently or consequently your FTP estimate. So and the same thing goes, like, you do the first one and you feel really good about it. You paced well, you feel like you went as hard as you could, and then that you start that second one, you just don't have the motivation. That average can drag your number down. So if, you know, you come out of that and the workouts are a little too easy, you look back at that 2x8 test, look at that 1 8-minute test that went really well. You know, knock 10% off that and see what that does, because chances are it'll elevate your FTP and it might be just the amount you need to bring you more in line with what you could actually do.
Our next question here comes from Eddie. I've recently signed up for Trainer Road and I'm in my second week of base training. I went for the sweet spot base low volume 2 plan as I have a limited number of hours per week I can dedicate to cycling. Just so you know, Eddie, too, and I'm not sure if you've done sweet spot base 1, but it doesn't sound like you have. The intention is that they're cumulative plans from sweet spot base 1 to sweet spot base 2, whichever volume you choose. But in certain situations, switch it, jumping up from one to the next is applicable. And we've talked about that in other podcasts. So moving on to his question, I've noticed that the workouts during the week are typically 1 hour, but there will be days that I have more time and feel like doing a 90-minute workout. So can I exchange some of the 1 hour workouts by a 90-minute workout? If so, how should I pick a good replacement workout? And he says, by the way, I still want to do the 90-minute workout that's already in the plan during the weekend.
Yeah, which is one option. I mean, you can just pull that workout and rearrange your week. If you want, for whatever reason, a shorter Saturday workout, you can repeat that 90-minute workout, or you can just comb the workout catalog and look for something that is 90 minutes that has this, the same type of effort. And then another alternative is to use the workout creator just to tack on a couple extra intervals. But if you have the time, it's in line with your, you know, your training objectives, it's not too much work for you, it doesn't leave you flat for the next workout, then sure, tack on another 30 minutes to those 60-minute jobbers.
Chad, I think too that you've created some workouts with a plus yep. one or a minus one. Can you explain those?
Yeah, thanks for that. That's yet another alternative. If you put your workout name, let's say it's Emerson, into the workout catalog, little search engine, if there are alternate versions, you know, plus one and minus one, plus two, minus two, they'll crop up. And a lot of the time I've already created this workout for this very need. Doesn't happen all the time, and I'm adding those all the frequently, so that database grows. But each of these versions are either downgraded or upgraded versions of that existing workout. So I'll either maybe trim the recovery or raise the intensity of the intervals slightly, add a couple intervals. Something about them changes. A plus means it's tougher. A minus means it's a little more manageable.
David, I've been cycling for about 5 years, and I'm now 50. With an exclamation point. Sounds like he's excited. I like that. my FTP did increase, but has pretty much remained static over the last couple of years. I've worked at it by doing a lot of FTP intervals, etc., and whilst I have increased my endurance, my FTP doesn't shift above 260 with my weight around 72 kilograms. My question is, what can I do to increase my power? Should I be doing shorter, high-intensity intervals?
Yeah, very likely, David. So what you're doing has led to a certain point and then you've kind of plateaued. So it's time to change the training stimulus. You got to mix things up a bit. High intensity intervals are one way to do it and probably the most effective in your case. If you haven't done or followed a structured training plan before, the sweet spot base plans are an excellent place to start because they'll maintain your muscular endurance and then start to place a little emphasis on that higher intensity stuff without burying you in it too quickly.
Yeah, I think he actually adds that he is starting sweet spot base and then he's going to move into a build phase.
There you go.
Perfecto.
Chris, what is the difference between the half-distance triathlon base and the half-distance triathlon plans? I'm coming, and actually, before we move into the next part, I assume that what he's talking about, and correct me if I'm wrong, guys, maybe you have some further insight, but I assume that what he's talking about is the existing half-distance, like the specialty plan we have, and his question is, what's the difference between the base plan and the specialty plan? Chad, go ahead.
Sure. So the specialty plans assume that you've already done base and build training. And prior to, just a month or two ago, we didn't have triathlon-specific base and build plans. So now we folded those into the mix. So rather than going sweet spot and then maybe, or sweet spot base and then a sustained power build and then into the triathlon specialty plan, we now have it set up such that you can actually follow tri base build and then specialty all the way through with swim and run workouts. So I'm guessing that's what you're after there.
Yeah, I think that's what he's asking. Then he asks, and I am coming off of the sweet spot base 2 plan. My half Ironman is in 16 weeks. Which plan do you recommend?
Yeah, so in that case, you've got 24 weeks of training, but only 16 weeks. So this kind of goes back to how much experience you have, how much base fitness you have. If your experience and base fitness either are low, then just start with the base plan and then move on through the build plan, and then your race will come at the end of that build. If, however, you're bringing some base fitness into this, plenty of half-distance triathlon experience into it, you could jump right into the build plan and move through the specialty plan. In either case, you're going to have to shave off 8 weeks. Which 8 weeks you shave off depends on, like I said, experience and fitness.
Anthony is a cross-country mountain bike racer. He has our next question. It actually kind of falls in line with this. He asks first, how much time should I dedicate to each phase? Since you're a cross-country mountain biker, Anthony, it's pretty straightforward. You're going to be 12, 8, and 8 per phase. So 12 weeks on the first one, 8 weeks, and 8 weeks. That's what we have laid out for the cross-country guys. Then he asks, should my plan go throughout my racing season? How early can they race, Chad? Like in their plan?
Yeah, I think Jonathan just did a blog post on this.
I did.
Yeah, so the way I like to look at it is with, especially if you go the sweet spot base route, as you come out of that, or as you work through 6 weeks or so, the first sweet spot base one, you're actually ready to start doing some sea level events. Push through the rest of it and head into your build training. You can start folding in some B level events. And then you work towards your A level events and try to time that such that you're completing your specialty plan right when those most important events hit, such that you're tapered and fresh and ready to roll. Then it's just a matter of, what can you tolerate for the rest of the season? Your racing schedule might be full enough that it keeps you sharp and provides enough stress to hold your fitness without burning you out. You might find that you have to weave in some shorter, high intensity workouts during the week.
Yeah. So when Jonathan and I were just talking about this yesterday, is kind of without a goal, we kind of feel like training is a little bit harder. Mm-hmm. Chad, let's say you like to race and For me, specifically, it's easier to race if, like, I have a race in 2 months and I have another race in another month, and then almost like every month I have a race. We would never advocate not racing, right, during the base season. Just don't taper for that race. Is that right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so the lower priority events, you treat them as such. You basically, the term we use is you train through them. So you don't rest yourself up for your Thursday interval workout. So if it's a C priority event and you're going to do a mountain bike race instead of it, maybe in the afternoon or evening, same thing. Just treat it like your workout. Don't go into it any more rested than you would. Just use it as your workout.
And it's not going to, like, because I'm in base, quote unquote, base training, it's not going to like blow up my body's fitness and it's going to go, hey, you're in base. It's going to screw up my whole base training. Yeah.
No, it's absolutely not. And that's such a common concern, and it makes me laugh. It's not like it's going to derail or reverse any aerobic adaptation. It just burns you up. And if the idea is to accumulate a lot of training stress and you're wasting yourself by doing these short, hard workouts and not much else, well, you're not going to gain a whole lot of the adaptations we're shooting for in what's supposed to be the easier, higher volume time of season.
So that's a good point. If I'm racing so much that I then miss all my weekday workouts, mm-hmm. then we would advocate against that. Is that correct?
In that case, yeah.
Yeah. And one key that I would say with this is manage your expectations with those races that you'll be doing earlier in the season. It's really important. Trust that you're playing the long ball and that it will pay off. And one thing I will say, a perk to this, is when you show up to those races, and let's say you're not, you know, because you literally are not in peak form, you're building your way towards there. And when you show up at a race and you do okay, whatever, you know, you finish wherever you finish, and then later on towards, when you get towards your peak, you just start destroying everybody, that feels pretty good. And people are always impressed with your improvement. So
yeah. And don't feel bad either. Pros do it all the time, right? You see
totally.
Tour de France winners get smoked early in the spring, right?
I mean, look at the tour itself, like, and take that principle and expand it over a whole year. Look at guys like Kittel and look at everybody else. They know that in the tour, they're going to have that first week if there's a lot of sprint stages, or in the Giro, the second week, they're going to have a lot of sprint stages, whatever it is. That's their time to shine. The rest of them, they're going to manage expectations. They're not going to go out there and they're not going to try to keep up with people they shouldn't be keeping up with, you know? And a lot of them, last year when Marcel Kittel got so sick for a while there and he just wasn't doing well, he was doing like random podunk races and not doing well. But you know what? It was what he needed to get in shape. And he was following his training plan. That was the important thing. So, and talk about a guy that probably has... I mean, rightfully so, a massive ego for winning, right? I mean, that guy can sprint like nobody else, and he has good hair, so.
so do you, Jonathan.
Thank you, Nate.
Chad, not so much.
I don't have any hair.
So his next question here, he says, should he use traditional or sweet spot base? And, I mean, we've gone through this pretty extensively. It really depends on where you're coming from. And for mountain biking and everything else, once again, it's not like one is better for one discipline or the other with mountain biking. You mentioned you'll be doing some longer races. I would advise you to look at blog.trainerroad.com, and we talked all about should I skip base training? We talked about which one should you pick and all that stuff. So hopefully that gives you the information you need there.
Well, in this way, before we do this one, in this case, Chad, what do you think for him specifically, traditional or sweet spot?
Yeah, good point.
Well, he's 18 weeks out. I would go with sweet spot base. He's also mountain biking, which is much more diverse requirements. I mean, even with something like Leadville, that the sort of stuff he's going to face is just more varied in its demands. And I prefer sweet spot base 9 times out of 10.
And his next question, can I start in a mid-volume plan and ramp it up to high volume if time allows? He mentioned that he was worried about committing to a high volume plan and not being able to work into his schedule.
Yeah, I think that's an ideal way to go about it, rather than the reverse of that, where you start high volume and then overdo it and have to basically backtrack or kind of lose your steam. But yeah, do the high volume or the mid volume, sorry, and then see how you respond. If you find that you're handling the stress well, you're recovering each week is a bit of progress. You're taking your recovery weeks, coming back at the end of those recovery weeks, chomping at the bit, ready to get back at it, then yeah, start to weave in a bit more high volume, which could mean jumping up to that high volume plan.
All right, Anthony, hopefully that gives you all the answers you need there, and good luck qualifying for Leadville. Hopefully you got in through the lottery. If not, best of luck qualifying for it. So yeah, let us know if you come up to Tahoe to qualify for it, by the way. That's like 30 minutes from our offices up here. So Chris, cross season is officially over for me now, so this is really for next year. So this is his question. He says, this season I was able to do much more racing than in the past. I had almost 3 months where I raced back-to-back days with 2.5 hours total each day between warming up and racing. I'm very consistent with checking my morning heart rate and adjusting that day's training based on my heart rate readings, which we have a blog post coming out on that, by the way, very soon. So I was mostly following the high-volume cyclocross plan, but on days where my heart rate was elevated, usually the Tuesday after a couple consecutive weekends of racing, I would switch to the mid- or low-volume workout for that day. So this is similar to Anthony's question. Do you think it would be better to knock out the intensities altogether on that Tuesday after the weekend racing and double up Wednesday and Thursday workouts, or continue as I did by just lowering the volume and keeping the intensity on that first training day back from that heavy racing load?
Yeah, I think you kind of have a little bit of trial and error to do there, but you've got to be carrying a lot of fatigue coming out of that weekend, having raced that much 2 days back to back, and a single day's recovery, it doesn't sound like it's prepping you. And I've been in similar situations a number of times that where I'm just flat on that Tuesday workout and I question, you know, the efficacy of it and just wonder whether I'm wasting my time. And in my case, I was. I needed to bump that workout to Wednesday, get an extra day of recovery in. So it might not be as simple as trimming the amount of intensity. It might be avoiding the intensity for another day. So maybe you ride easy, shift your workout to the next morning or the next evening. And then as far as doubling up, you might be compounding that problem because then you're on a Wednesday, Thursday, carrying a lot of fatigue into Friday, maybe not fresh and ready to roll again on the weekend. So you may find that occasional weeks, just coming off of a heavy race weekend, you only do a single day of intensity, especially if you're getting two solid race days each week and then you're adding another intervals workout to that, it's probably sufficient.
Yeah, and then his other rides could be the more endurance kind of add TSS that's not going to really strip you down too much.
Exactly.
Michael's question is, roughly how many weeks will it usually take to reach racing fitness? I raced last year, but I stopped training in last October, and I've been only riding about 2 to 3 times a week since then. Is it possible to get back in race shape in time for May? He says, I'm planning to sign up with Trainer Road this February. Do you have a training plan that will incorporate outdoor riding? Let's address the first one first, Chad. He says, how many weeks will it take to reach racing fitness? We kind of talked about how that trends, I guess, with your baseball specialty.
Yeah, and then, of course, the experience and the amount of fitness you're bringing to the table. So you can get race fit quickly. I've seen people do it over the course of a six-week sweet spot base one. And yeah, you're not going to race optimally. You're maybe not going to win, but you also may not get tailed off the back. You may even be able to play a little bit. So it definitely depends on a lot of factors, how quickly you respond to it, how good your nutrition is, how well you recover, et cetera. But it can be done in a very compressed time frame. So I would say 6 weeks at a minimum. And like I said, you're not going to have top end race fitness, but you should still be able to race pretty well. And then by May, what is that? 5 months away, mm-hmm. So 20 weeks. That's plenty of time. That's enough time for you to do your sweet spot base 1 and 2 or 12 weeks of base conditioning and then an 8-week build plan and then, you know, decide whether or not you want to specialize at that point or just race and piece things together.
And then the final question that he had there, do you have training plans that will incorporate outdoor riding?
All of our plans to some extent do incorporate outdoor riding and that you can substitute your workout or an outdoor workout for the indoor one. We've recommended time and again to save the more structured stuff for indoors and do the more lower intensity, steady state type stuff outdoors. As far as weaving those two things together, that's in the works, but that's a ways out.
Joe is a 46-year-old who's been riding for 3 years, and two of which he's been putting in 8,000 plus miles a year. So pretty intense stuff. That's a lot of distance there. He says, I've never followed a structured training program for a whole year, but I've used Trainer Road in the last 2 winters doing mostly sweet spot type workouts and felt this has really improved my fitness. But he asks a question. He says, I've tested many times in general. Forgive me, I just lost it there. I've tested many times in the past, generally testing between 250 and 260. So for my base training, he said he used a FTP of 242, which by the workouts seemed about right. It seems that when I am in tempo or sweet spot, I am able to hit the power or the target power or 10 or so watts above and complete the workouts. They're tough but doable. But my issues occur when I'm at threshold or above. I'm not able to complete all the intervals and need more rest between them. It would seem I lack anaerobic endurance. Would that be your conclusion there, Chad?
Not really. It probably lacks aerobic or muscular endurance and anaerobic conditioning. So, let's see where this goes, but I don't think that's exactly it.
He says, I completed sweet spot base and now started general build. Again, I wasn't able to complete the FTP test, so I left it at 242. On the bright side, I did lose 4 pounds during base, so not all bad. My question is, am I right about lacking anaerobic endurance? And is general build the right build plan for me? Also, my heart rate when I'm at threshold gets very high. For example, I did a workout Centennial on Saturday, and I got to 180 BPM, which is my max. So I know I'm putting in the effort. So, yeah
pretty simply, Joe, I don't think your threshold is 242 right now. I've been in this boat before, too, where I just wanted to cling to a particular number, and I just gutted out the workouts knowing full well that they were too hard. If your heart rate is maxed out the whole time on Centennial is a threshold workout, So you would expect it to be, you know, right up at your functional threshold heart rate. But it sounds like you're doing too much work for how these workouts should actually feel. So I'd recommend either reassessing and being a little more honest with yourself and pacing a little more conservatively, because I have a feeling your threshold is, you know, maybe 3, 4, 5% lower than that, something closer to 230. And you could even just try trimming it to that and seeing how the workouts go.
And that might, for when you say that's your max heart rate, I'm guessing you're doing like 220 minus age, because if you're getting, that's probably not your actual, just to be a stickler here, your actual max heart rate based on how high it can go. If someone put a gun to your head and said, go harder, I bet it would go higher than 180.
Yep, certainly. And then you also ask in there, Joe, you say, is general build the right build plan for me? And this one, I would say, don't hate the plan, hate the FTP. So in this situation, like Chad just pointed out, if you don't have a correct FTP, I'm sure general build will be pretty taxing. So,
yeah, too taxing. Mm-hmm.
JC, hey, I just registered. Good to have you on board, JC. If I've done a full active recovery month in November and my own base workouts in December, just mostly high velocity and strength intervals and a lot of volume, where should I start? Should I start with sweet spot base or just jump to traditional base 2? Looking forward to hear back from you.
JC, I'm going to assume you're on a time-constrained schedule like most of us are, and that you only have a handful of hours to dedicate to riding each week, which is going to lead me to my usual answer, which is sweet spot base 1 and 2.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Even though you've been doing a lot of volume coming in, it's still... still would make sense.
Yeah, those plans are a nice blend of a lot of the things you need to kind of have in place before you move on to your more specific stuff. In particular, the sweet spot work does a really good job of bumping up your higher end endurance. And then the VO2 max and the over-under start to prepare you for the stuff that's really going to grow your fitness.
Linda, hi, I signed up to Trainer Road late summer and dabbled a bit doing 4 weeks of your low volume traditional base before settling on the sweet spot based low volume plan. I'm in week 4 of that, and I've already seen improvements. Good job, Linda. Good to hear. Nice. I'm a long-term cyclist, and you say in parentheses, read older than 50, trying to get back to my glory days after years of unstructured riding and training. Although using the low volume plan, I find the 3 hard sessions a week tough and have been adding in extra recovery weeks when needed. On re-listening to your podcasts, especially in episode 1, Chad mentions that 2 interval sessions per week are productive, and adding a 3rd gives limited improvement, or more can be counterproductive. Do we want to address that part first, Chad, or just move on to the question there?
Yeah, well, often enough, a couple days, especially if you're new to structured training, a couple days of intensity are sufficient. And you can start to weave that 3rd day in when you've noticed a positive response to the other 2. So just because there are 3 interval sessions scheduled a week, if you find that you're not responding well to it, and being 50 plus can definitely have an influence on that, you might find that maybe that weekend ride is, and I think this is where this is going, it is something else entirely. So rather than an entire extra recovery week, it might just be a question of an extra day or 2 of recovery. Maybe leave that 3rd day of intervals off for a little while.
And to clarify, this is a circumstantial thing, what Chad just said. It's not as if we think that 2 days of interval training is ideal for everyone. This all mm-hmm. depends on how your body responds and what's your prior experience with it.
Yeah, and my guess is that after she does this for a while and actually absorbs the stress and recovers a little more effectively, that she'll be able to tack on that 3rd day of intervals, no problem.
So she says, my question is, weather permitting, could I just do a longer, steadier outdoor ride at the weekend or during the weekend and still improve and get good benefit from the plan? We have a regular club ride at a suitable pace for me, and I miss the camaraderie of group riding.
Yeah, and the enjoyment is always important. So if for no other reason, I would suggest going the route you've suggested here for that reason alone. But also, like I said earlier, is to see, you know, where exactly you start to absorb the stress effectively and start to rebound from the training and notice improvement.
And Linda, what you can do is, after a few more weeks, when you get on those climbs with your friends, you can just talk to them the whole time. And they'll just go, And they'll say, what, Linda, what's wrong? How'd you do that?
Exactly. You know, and Linda...
That's the best.
Linda, we're actually kind of on a similar track here. So this is something that I do a lot of, and Mainly, it's, I just have a fascination with getting lost on my mountain bike and my road bike on the weekends when I can. So this is something that I employ to great success. And I know Chad's done a fair amount of this too with the structured stuff in the weekend and then out on the, or on the week and then out on the weekend, he gets in his longer stuff that he wants. So.
And I'm getting more into mountain biking. I'm trying to use some of my, I'll do maybe a 90 minute on Saturday and then Sunday get some skills on the mountain bike and go outside and
yes.
It's fun.
That's so good.
What's mm-hmm. we? It's fun.
Yes, for cross riders and mountain bikers, that's such a key. Like you know, you can't neglect that. Those weekend rides, you know, get your specificity done. Make sure that box is checked. Make sure all your interval training is done, and then get out there and have fun and build skill. So, and fall a few times, that makes it fun. So, Con. I'm trying, let's see right here. I'm trying to follow Sweet Spot base and then build plan towards doing some road races from April on. I do about 100 road miles per week and want to know how I can incorporate these two trainer road sessions to make sure I get all the FTP benefit without burning myself out. And you say the road miles will be with the club, so you can't control the pace or intensity.
Yeah, Con, this might come down to choosing one or the other. And if you want to do your two interval sessions and then 100 miles on top of that, if you can tolerate that, that's one thing. But I have a feeling if you're already kind of topped out with those 100 miles on the road each week and then you're trying to dump these workouts on top of it, something's going to have to give. So perhaps you can trim that outdoor mileage a bit, maybe make one of those rides not a club ride so that you can control the pace or intensity. But some form of modification with your schedule here is probably going to have to take place.
And the next question that we have is from Eric. He says, I'm going into week two of traditional base training on mid-volume, and he's wondering, should I be taking a carb drink during the two-hour sessions? So I assume he's talking during the training, right?
Yeah, that's a tough one, Eric. It's these long, slow distance rides are all about cultivating a fat-burning system. And when you introduce carbohydrate or sugar into the mix during this training intervention, it kind of flies in the face of what you're after. So I'm not saying you need to suffer through these rides and basically be in a brain fog and on the verge of passing out the entire time. If you start to feel really poorly, then yeah, maybe have a squirt of a carbo fluid or something. But if at all possible, try to really limit your sugar intake over the course of these, what are supposed to be fat burning rides.
Yeah. For 2 hours, there's no reason that someone would have to do that. Is that correct?
Yeah, probably not. Unless you're really metabolically damaged. And you, or perhaps are just working a little too hard. But if you're keeping the intensity, you know, roughly within the percentage range of FTP that we're targeting with these rides, it should be pretty easy for you or pretty manageable for you to do most of that work aerobically and not use any sugar.
Does any of that advice differ with recovery drinks, Chad? Like, you know, post-ride nutrition type of stuff?
Same thing. I mean, you're not really depleting sugar stores if you're burning fat the whole time, so you really shouldn't have to replenish sugar stores that you didn't deplete afterward.
Yeah, can we talk about that in general, like post-ride recovery? Chad, correct me if I'm wrong, but I used to be such a huge advocate of, oh, I need to get my simple sugars in within 30 minutes, replace my glycogen, blah, blah, blah. And reading some research on it is that you do recover that glycogen faster, but after 24 hours, the athlete is going to have the, if they just, you know, had the regular day, their glycogen is going to be replaced the same either way. And it's a lot less stressful.
Yeah.
To just,
yeah. That repletion takes place regardless, whether or not you do it immediately post-workout, which I have a hard time doing because my stomach just can't tolerate it. Or if you do it over the course of the rest of the day, you kind of end up in the same spot. And you can experiment with this. If you find that getting your carbohydrate or your post-recovery nutrition in immediately after the end of the ride just makes for a better workout the next day, well, maybe that works best for you. But it's not a hard, fast rule. And as long as you get the nutrition in over the course of the next 24 hours, you're probably going to be in good shape for that next workout. On top of that, or in addition to that, if you are an athlete who has to work out again, you know, a triathlete who, you know, has a hard workout in the morning and then a hard run or any workout later on in the day, then that quicker carbohydrate repletion is going to be a bigger factor.
You know, one thing I've noticed too, a lot of the time, and Chad, you mentioned like your stomach just can't take it. Recovery drinks generally have some type of, we add something in there with most of them in many cases, if we're taking a recovery drink to make it taste better. Right. And, and I've seen a lot of people, you know, with their recovery drink, I notice there's a good amount of stuff in there that's supplementary, if you will, or perhaps that's a bad term, but they're definitely adding in stuff to make it taste good and kind of give themselves a reward, which I totally understand. But there can be kind of a just beware of that potential detriment that you could actually be adding in. You know, if you're just, if really look at it, you know, are you just full of sugar in that thing? Does it taste really sweet and good, but is it really doing you good? You know, it's just something to keep an eye out for.
Yeah. So agreed.
And I'm not sure if post recovery or post trail brews or anything else like that count on here, but that's for somebody else to answer. So the last question that we're going to have today is from Joshua. He says, "Hey guys, I've just gotten Trainer Road. Good to hear. I have 24 weeks till my first race. It's a 100-mile mountain bike race with 11,000 feet of climbing. Sounds like Leadville. What you say there. Don't know if it is. If it is, congrats. I've already started on the sweet spot base high volume plan, but need to know the best way to map out the rest of my time training. What should a marathon cross country mountain biker do, Chad?"
Jonathan, you can take this one if you want. This is right up your alley.
Cool. Yeah. So since you've already started with sweet spot base and the high volume plan, I would recommend going in. And if this is a 100-mile mountain bike race with 11,000 feet of climbing, if it's Leadville, I recommend doing the sustained power build. If it's a course that has a lot of constant undulations, I would drop it back down to general build. And then if it's something that's like a normal cross-country Olympic course, like a normal cross-country course with just a bunch of steep things, then even though it's a long event, that short power is still going to be very beneficial on that day. Once you get there, we have a cross-country marathon plan that's fantastic. If it is Leadville or something that, because Leadville in many ways is more of a road race than it is a mountain bike race in many respects. And if that's the case, even a rolling road race plan could be a very good option. Right, Chad?
Or a climbing road race.
Yeah, climbing road race. Yep. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, agreed.
So just because it's not on pavement doesn't mean that that type of power won't be put down, right? So
exactly.
So that's what I would recommend for you, Josh. You have 24 weeks. So you said you're started sweet spot base. So I don't know how far you're through. If you're 4 weeks through, then you're probably right on track to finish in time. If you need to cut some time, if you're coming in with substantial fitness and you feel like you can leapfrog up to sweet spot base too, that's fine. If you feel like you can cut a taper week out of your specialty plan, that's fine. The one thing I would suggest is the closer you get to your race event, the more crucial those workouts become. So making adjustments there can have a greater effect potentially than making adjustments early on. So anything else to add, guys?
No, that covers it.
Cool.
Good job, Jonathan.
Thank you. Thanks, Nate. All right, that's it for today. Thanks so much for listening, guys. Once again, you can submit more questions. Just go to support@trainerroad.com. Send that out to us. We will answer as many questions as we can get the next time. You can find this podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, SoundCloud, and everywhere else where you find your podcasts. Thanks a bunch, guys. Talk to you next time.
Thanks, everybody. Talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.